welcome to the Pocket Gamer Plaguecast. My name is Diseased James Gilmore. Joining me today is the disgustingly healthy Emily Soden.
I like to keep things balanced, you know.
Yeah, well, I prefer your side of the seesaw at the minute. If people have seen any of my videos recently, they know I'm ill and I have daggers in my throat, which I wouldn't recommend. But it's near the end of the year and there's podcasting to be done. So you'll have to suck it up and deal with my crap voice, everybody, because it's happening anyway.
It's fine. It's fine. Sick voice is sexy voice.
I'm not so sure about that. Sounds more like skanky voice to me, but it's okay. I've been working with it. It was very important to do today's podcast as well, because as we were discussing beforehand, people were looking at it going, oh, bit of a rubbish week for mobile. Not much in the way of new releases coming. And M, our own keeper of the future prophecies, was like, I feel it in my bones. It's going to be a big week, you guys.
Yep, my newsy bones were tingling.
They were, and boy, were they bang on, because what a lineup we've got going on for you this week. How's about Fez on mobile? Maybe Life is Strange on mobile. That'd be nice, wouldn't it? Gorogoa, one of the most interesting new puzzlers I've seen on any platform. That's just arrived after 20 million years in development. Like a Boss, which is a game that Glenn's asked me to pimp because he thinks it's really good. And you know what? It's quite good. Like it. Inside from Playdead. It's all coming up in the next 45 minutes or so. Plus, we talked to the creators of Dragon's Watch, which is a mobile RPG which brings a six-shooting revolver to the UI game. And it's a good thing. But first, the news. We spoke last week about a Harry Potter game coming to mobile, and the week before, actually, from Niantic, the guys who did that Pokemon Go, and how it was going to be, oh, you're a wizard, and you're wandering around the streets of your local town, and, I don't know, you're killing muggles. That's what happens in the films, right? It's basically muggle genocide.
Yeah, I think you're kind of on the wrong page of that one, but, you know, we'll go with it.
All right, fine. Well, there is now news of another game joining that one. So you've got the Niantic Pokemon Go Harry Potter. You've also got the mobile RPG Live for 7 Years at Hogwarts mobile game as well, called Hogwarts Mystery. I think that what's happened here is they've dedicated a separate department of Warner Brothers, haven't they, to Harry Potter games.
Yeah, it's Portkey Games, isn't it?
There you go. So I think they've now gone, well, let's start cashing in, because as we've talked about in this little article that was wrote, where all the PG staff, including UM, say whether this is a good or a bad thing. It's one of the less exploited franchises on mobile, isn't it?
Yeah, I actually find that really surprising. I suppose I would never, like, actively search for any Harry Potter games, just because I kind of... it never crossed my mind, but maybe they were just waiting for, like, the right point.
Yeah, they've decided to cash in big time now, and I guess they're still working on the new Fantastic Creatures and all that business, so the franchise is still alive very much, and they need to keep interest stoked for, I guess, the inevitable reboot that will happen in 10 years, because you know it's going to happen. You know they're going to remake Harry Potter again.
Yeah, which I'm really not looking forward to. Like, maybe that's just going to be me as, like, an old woman however many years later being like, oh, it was good back in my day.
My Ron Weasley was the best Ron Weasley. When in fact, they're all terrible.
Yeah, they're all... every Weasley. I'm joking. I love Weasleys.
The Weasleys are fine. Yeah, maybe they'll get a good actor to play Harry Potter this time.
Sassy mother.
Snap. Yeah, so again, we don't have a great deal of news bar that. It's going to be 2018 for both of those games, and we'll let you know if it turns out to be good or bad, or whatever it's going to turn out to be. Also, referring back to podcasts from previous weeks and news we gave, The Sexy Brutale came out, I think it was last week, and you were saying, Em, having played the game, that performance issues on the Switch wasn't running great.
Yeah, no.
That's a lot of no. Well, it seems that Tequila Works, who's the guys behind it, they heard all your no's echoing out through the cables of the internet, and have said, quote, "We wanted to let you know, you particularly, Em, that we are working on a patch for the Switch version to improve performance and resolution on handheld and TV mode, solve freezing issues, and fix some text strings."
Yeah, it was just so weird. Like, that's what, like, there was one person in the comments that was just like, oh, so you decided to fix it this week and not delay the launch by a week just so you can fix the stuff to make everyone else happy. Oh, okay then.
Yeah, it's a tricky thing. I'm always reluctant to lay into studios for this sort of thing because usually there are elements at work that we can't see. So, for example, like if you miss a release date for a game, if you set a release date for whatever it might be, 18th of November, and you miss it, in your head that might be like, well, if we know we've got to fix some stuff, it would be much better to just delay it for a week. But there could be shareholders involved that if you miss the release date, then that actually causes massive issues and costs the company an insane amount of money further down the line. And it's actually more financially responsible from their point of view to just release it than do a day one patch or something like that. Or in this case, a day seven patch. I agree, it's annoying, and no one wants to buy a game that's broken, and it doesn't really help anybody. Mm. But I get the impression that it's often a bit more tricky, and I think like the developers would love to have done that.
Yeah, of course, but I think this is just coming off the end of the fact that their Rhyme port wasn't that good either.
Oh, really? I haven't played that.
That's what I hear, at least. Like, I think I can't remember if it was John or Dave that did it for the review for PG, but they said that there was some issues, and I've seen a lot of talk on Twitter being like, oh, you know, Rhyme wasn't that good either. I really hope they do better in the future and blah, blah, blah.
That's a shame. As you say, it doesn't work for anyone, because if you're a person who's paid 15 quid and your game is stuttery and broken, that sucks. Like, that's not good. Yeah. No one wants that. So hopefully this one will sort it out. I tend to hang back a little bit now, and I never buy anything day one anyway, because inevitably they're going to add fixes. They're going to sort out the PS4 Pro update in some cases and add HDR later. And I'd rather play the game in its best possible form. So if you did buy it and were disappointed, check back next week, and it should be hopefully patched and fixed by then. Also, upcoming games to look forward to next year, because we're going to be talking about the best releases of this year in the final podcast, which is going to happen in the middle of next week. But we've got an amazing lineup, as you already heard, of new releases this week. However, it's going to keep coming into 2018. Thumper Pocket Edition is on its way. Did you get a chance to mess with Thumper?
Nah. This is a total, you know, I haven't even seen anything about it.
Right. This game is rad. So it's a rhythm action game, essentially, coupled with this bizarre psychedelic racer where you're this little bug who's zooming down a track in a straight line, and you have to hit power-up points or hit these illuminated bars or jump over obstacles and swerve around corners, and you have to do it all in time to this industrial soundtrack that's kind of drumming away in the background. It appeared on Switch, and it's now coming to mobile. I really like this game. I think it's a fantastically inventive, unique thing. It's almost got a bit of a horror undercurrent to it. You have to defeat bosses, and they look all a bit Cthulhu and mental. And yeah, it's something else. It's really clever. My concern, and I don't want to be negative, is that it's a very, very, very precise game that demands like pitch-perfect control precision to get through it. And I am interested to see how this is going to convert into a swipe gesture-based control system. I feel like it's got to be simplified quite a lot, because with this game you have to do swiping left, forward, up and down on your D-pad or on your analog stick. But then you also have to press other buttons in time with it too.
Okay.
And you ain't going to be able to do that on a touchscreen in portrait mode. So clearly they're just going to be like, you're just going to have to swipe, I reckon. Just up, down, left, right, and that's going to be it. I don't know. They might come up with something genius. But I will be very interested to see how this plays out. But I'm very excited, because when you see it in portrait mode in the images, it's perfectly suited, because it's just a racetrack stretching on into the distance, you know? Mm. So I am massively hype. We loved it on Switch. It's going to apparently be, because the pre-orders have opened now, you can now pre-order things on the App Store, which has confused things massively when we're looking for preview windows, but whatever. you can pre-order it for £4.99 or $4.99, which is dead cheap, because it started at about £16, £17. Cool. And if it's even close to the console version or Switch version, then this is something to be super excited by. As well as SteamWorld Heist, which is coming to the Switch this month, 28th of December, in fact. So if you got your Switch for Christmas, then go and download this, because this is also wicked. it plays out like XCOM, only imagine XCOM was a side-scrolling platformer where you play as cute, colourful robots with cool hats. And that's what you're dealing with.
Yeah, I'm down with that.
It's really good. Like, SteamWorld Dig, it's like part of the same universe, but it's a totally different game to SteamWorld Dig. Mm. And it's just a really clever, tactical, side-on 2D combat game, turn-based combat game. And it's got bags of character, and it worked really well on mobile, which you can get it for at the minute. You can already get it on touchscreens. And it worked great on consoles, brilliant on PC, and I see no reason why it isn't also going to be wicked on the Switch too. We don't know what price it's coming out at, but you can see our reviews for the game. Get it if you haven't already on whatever platform, because it's just, if you like strategy at all, it's a cracker. And yeah, 28th of December is the date for that one. SteamWorld Heist is the name. And get your wallets prepped for download. Dragon's Watch is one of the latest mobile RPGs to appear on touchscreens. Harry Homewood, I am joined by today, who is the co-founder of developer The Secret Police. Hello, Harry. How are you doing?
Hello. Very good, thank you. Very good.
First of all, why did you go into this genre? Because, I mean, there's so much competition in this particular area. Why did you decide to go for this one, and what are you bringing to the table?
So we were big fans of some of the Japanese and Korean games like Brave Frontier or Summoner's War or even Monster Strike and Puzzle and Dragons, those kind of things that are very accessible on the surface, but which are have a lot of depth to them. And so if you play Dragon's Watch, you'll see it's fairly easy to understand straight away, at least for this genre. But underneath it, there's a lot of depth. So, you know, we've got 700 characters and they've each got lots of different moves and spells and things that they can do. And so kind of the metagame comes down to kind of what characters are you using in combination with what other characters to fight what enemies in what locations. So it's, we like the genre because it's kind of mobile friendly in that it's easy to pick up and play and you can interact with it for, you know, a minute and have a meaningful game. But it is a game also that you can play for many, many hours. And we're seeing already, and we've only been out a week, but sort of the chat on our Discord and on our forums and social media, people are kind of exchanging hints and tips, which is exactly what we wanted, that kind of Magic the Gathering sort of depth of play, but in a game that's kind of easily packaged and easy to start playing.
Well, the trickiest thing is to get the first few minutes of a game right. Because you either drown people in tutorials, which are instantly off-putting, or you throw them in cold and you risk them bouncing off it because they're confused and don't know what to do. With this one, you've gone in, I think one of the things that helps you in is the UI that you've chosen. So for me, like, touchscreen has always been a struggle with getting the right control scheme for the right game. On consoles and PC, they're very established. Like, a first-person shooter pretty much handles exactly the same on console, no matter which one you're playing. You always know which thumbstick does what, for example. Whereas with touchscreen, you've got almost, you know, literally as well as figuratively, a blank slate, and you can choose to do what you want with it. What you've gone for here is this kind of UI wheel at the bottom, like a spinning six-shooter bullet chamber, which is divided up into triangles like you would get on a... what's the game I'm thinking of? Trivial Pursuit.
Yes, very much so.
So it looks a little bit like that. And the idea is that you can spin it to select whichever three characters are on the eastern side of the circle, if you like. And you could choose any three characters to attack at any one time. And you tap each of those characters to execute an attack. And when they charge up a special attack, you kind of pull the little triangle representing that character out to execute a special attack.
Yeah.
And that's sort of it. And
yes,
it's actually quite a neat little system. How did you fall upon that?
Well, it started from the point of view that we, as I said, we love like Brave Frontier and Summoner's War and all of those games. But one of the things we don't like about them is that the battles can feel a little bit brainless. So kind of underneath the surface, there's a really good, fun, complex game there. But in terms of what the user's actually doing, they're just tapping on an enemy to attack it, tapping on another enemy to attack it. And that kind of feels... You feel a little bit separated from the process. So we wanted to do two things. We wanted to make it more tactile, so it feels like you're doing something. We also wanted to give you a bit more strategic control. So we kind of started from the point of view of, okay, how are we going to let you do something with the formation of the squad? And we kind of experimented with systems where you were kind of dragging characters back and forth. And it felt a little bit too complicated. The other thing we were really aware of was we wanted it to be, you know, this is a mobile game. We're not taking a console game and porting it to mobile. We're not even making a tablet game. This is a game for mobile phones, really. So we wanted you, even on kind of the biggest mobile phone, to be able to play it in one hand without having to change your grip on the phone. We didn't know, it's deliberately in portrait format, so you know, you can be on the tube holding on with one hand and playing with the other, or you can sit there sipping a cup of coffee. And I think that kind of stuff is really important on mobile, because you know, a lot of, especially with relatively hardcore games like Dragon's Watch, we're appealing to people who probably play games on other formats as well.
Yeah, weirdly it falls into something that I do instinctively whenever I, you know, get a new phone and I lay out apps. I lay out the apps so that they are all within reach of my thumb. Yep. So they kind of form like a crescent, a half thing around the shape of my phone, because there's no point in putting anything in the top left corner when I'm holding it in my right hand, because my thumb won't go that high and I'll have to use my other hand, and it sort of defeats the object of intuitive design, if you see what I mean.
Exactly. And in the context of a mobile game, you know, that's really important, because what we need is, you know, we want people to come back and enjoy the game as often as possible. And any kind of barriers that you put in the way of that, whether it's, you know, having really long session lengths or compulsorily long the session lengths or really long load times or you've got to have both hands free to play it. Those things get in the way of people playing. So
in this one, that when you're spinning the wheel, you're selecting from your roster of six characters, which isn't arbitrary, as you say. The idea is that there's an elemental system at work. We've seen this in other RPGs, so it follows a rock, paper, scissors kind of thing. So if your enemy is a water-based enemy, for example, the game will highlight certain characters which will have a power boost when they attack that character. So you can spin the circle before you start attacking. Once you start attacking with one character, it's locked down for that particular round.
That's right. So those three characters will then attack. But then there's a lot of... And you kind of discover this as you play through the game. I mean, as you said, you know, tutorials are a difficult thing in mobile games. What we found, and we watched a lot of people playing some of the Asian RPGs before we started sort of designing how we were going to introduce Dragon's Watch. And you get these systems where you're basically forced through a path of tap here, now tap here, now tap here, now tap here. And you go through, a lot of the time, you go through quite a complicated process in that first few minutes of gameplay. You might summon a character and do a battle and do a fusion or whatever it is. And what you find at the end of that process, if you ask someone, even a relatively experienced gamer, do you know what you just did? A lot of the time, they've got no idea. They were just mindlessly. So you kind of have this tutorial that you do a lot of stuff, but you haven't learned a lot of stuff. And then at the same time, there's other games that throw you in too much. And, you know, for a lot of players, that's just intimidating. I'm not saying we've got it completely right yet. We kind of tried to go between those two, and you know, if you want to veer off the path a little bit, you can. But at the same time, there's certain things we want you to learn at certain times, kind of slowly exposing this complexity to people, because you've got people, you know, some of our players are big fans of this genre and understand it, and other players are, you know, have never seen this kind of thing before. So it was kind of getting that balance right.
Did you toy with the idea of like a big RPG style plotting? Do you know, you're moving from fight to fight, from wave to wave, and the idea is around progression through fusing cards together. I say cards, but you know, they're not presented as cards, but it's
underneath, it's a card game.
Yeah. So did you toy with the idea of doing a kind of big plot, or did you want to rely on kind of the pure gameplay of just like, I want to do another fight and that's the thing pushing me forward, watching the numbers go up?
I would say it's a little bit of both, but the story and the dialogue, which is there, it's really there to kind of glue it together rather than being the driving force. So, you know, there's enough there that there's a context for the world, and you kind of, over time, you'll understand why you're doing it, and gives the characters a little bit of personality. And, you know, every character's got a biog, and if you evolve characters up, you can kind of follow their progress through the world as their card stats increase and their bio changes. I guess in a way what we did is take some of those Asian games and take away all the things that we didn't like about them, or kind of improve all the things we didn't like about them.
What didn't you like then?
So... from a technical standpoint, they all require you to have an internet connection all the time, which is a bit of a pain. So it's actually one of the hardest things we've done in this game, is make it so you can play offline, but it's still kind of secure. You know, we found, as I said, the combat just being a little bit untactile and a little bit brainless, and we wanted to add both a little bit of, I mean, I wouldn't say arcade feel, but just making something feel, I think, you know, this is something Supercell do very well. You know, they took a genre like farming games that was pretty established, and took it from just going tap, tap, tap to, you know, using a swipe when they did Heyday. And just, again, making it a little bit more tactile. And that worked really well. And so it's kind of, it's also on the story side, story and background is very important in Asian RPGs. But actually what we found is if you watch most Western players playing it, they just tap through the story and they don't want to read, you know, that primarily you want to play a little bit of story. So, but you don't want to be tapping through for 10 minutes to play a 1 minute quest. So what we did was just try to smooth that out a little bit, and make the story play out during the course of the quest rather than it being something that stops you getting on.
If it wasn't in like a free-to-play environment, in this parallel dimension where free-to-play wasn't a thing, I mean, you guys, you use energy systems so that eventually if you try and play consistently, you will run low on energy and either have to wait for it to creep back in there. Was that something that you would still do if it was like made in a vacuum? Or is it that one of those things where like you have to recognize the real-world economics and this is a good way of allowing people to play for free but also putting a little bit of restriction on so that if people want to pay for more access, they can? Because it's always... We ask this of a lot of people because it's always, you know, a tricky balance to make.
Yeah, I mean, we don't like energy mechanics per se. I don't think they're, you know... We haven't got like loads of timers, you know, it's not a game where you build something and then wait, you know, first of all, 1 minute, then 10 minutes, then. But just because I don't think they necessarily do add anything to gameplay, although, you know, even the old, very old RTSs from day one with Warcraft and Dune 2 had a kind of timer mechanic on them. But it's pretty unusual for players to run out of energy in Dragon's Watch at the moment. There are situations where they will, but we don't really see energy as being a particular monetization system. More that it's sometimes good to send people away from the game, just so that they've got a reason to come back later. It does seem like there's a lot of data from other games that shows if people can play for as long as they want, then they're actually more likely to burn out their interest quickly.
Yeah, I've heard that from a lot of people. Yeah. The idea is you want people to keep coming back week after week than just cane it all in a weekend.
Yes. It's just, especially because with a game like this, you know, a lot of it's about complexity. In the long term, a lot of Dragon's Watch is about PvP, which at the moment is almost like a beta feature. We're just kind of testing it out. But you want people sticking around for the long term and really getting into it. And it just does seem like you can let people burn through too quickly otherwise.
Sure.
Really, all of our monetization comes from the summoning, where you're spending gems to get new heroes. And we've tried to be pretty generous with that. I think, you know, it's early days for us, but it looks like, you know, people are, you know, not everyone's spending money, obviously, but enough people want to spend money with. But if you look at the reviews that we're seeing on the App Store, a lot of people are saying it's not too aggressive. And it's a difficult balance, and I don't know if we've got it right or not yet, but if you create an environment where players feel that the game is fair, then some of those players will happily go on and spend some money.
Your team, the Secret Police, we're talking about, you said seven people involved?
Seven-person strong team, yeah.
Obviously, that's not huge when you compare to, you know, obviously massive large studios, of which there are now several operating in the mobile space. How long does it take you guys to put together something like this? When did you start working on it?
About April 2015, so it's about 2.5 years.
Okay, so that's a long time.
Yeah, I mean, the process was, when we started, it was just three people. And we spent about 6 months prototyping. We knew we wanted to make a game broadly in this genre, but the first iteration of the game was more... It had the revolver, but the revolver was more in the centre of the screen, and it kind of played like more like a tower defence game.
Right, okay.
In like it was real time. Things were coming towards you in real time, and you'd rotate, and like, you know, you would be putting the appropriate elemental hero in the right lane to attack. And it was kind of fun, but we felt it was a bit too intense. You know, it had that kind of Plants versus Zombies relentless feel. We felt that for a game, it was just a bit too much. And so we really liked the mechanism of the wheel, which originally, I think that the original inspiration for that was the old iPod click wheel.
Really? Yeah. Okay, that makes sense, yeah.
Yeah, and it immediately felt nicer in your hand and the pacing of the game was improved, and we knew that was then the mechanic we wanted to use.
That little bit of UI, that's a really nice touch. Obviously, we play plenty of these style of games, and the ones we're always championing are the ones that use the touchscreen in a way that feels intuitive and plays to the strength of the device, of the platform. And so you wind up with things like, and people will be bored of hearing me talking about it, but things like The Room, where it really takes advantage of the tactile nature of a touchscreen.
Totally. I mean, The Room, I don't know if The Room was an inspiration for the Revolver, but I did the sound effects on the game.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we were a small team, as I said. And I wanted the Revolver to kind of feel like the devices that you get in the room, so it's got that kind of ticking sound as you turn.
Yeah,
I totally agree. I mean, just it's The Room is such a lovely, lovely game, and it's a game that would not work as well on any other platform, which is exactly what you want, really.
Ideal, yeah. So if people wanted to give it a go, they can find it on its iPhone, iPad. Is it on Google Play as well at the moment?
It is, yep, Google Play and iPhone worldwide.
Okay, so that's Dragon's Watch, and you can check that out now. Harry, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
Out and about this week. Everything, pretty much. So, strap in. Let's start with Fez Pocket Edition, which is Phil Fish's game from back in 2012, which got a lot of attention because of Indie Game the Movie, where Phil Fish turned up and was a bit of a character, and people had unpleasant things to say about him, and it ultimately ended up in the cancellation of Fez 2, which he was working on, and then he just kind of famously flipped out on Twitter and went, you know what, screw this, I can't take this anymore, game over, cancelled. And that was that. So we haven't heard much from him since. Until now, where Fez has popped up in Pocket Edition form, floating touch controls on iOS. I've played it. There's a video on AppSpy. I think it's a pretty good port. You played the original game, didn't you, Em, a bit?
I did, like, years ago when it first came out. Like, I bought that on launch, I think.
Okay.
But I remember it being, like, quite tricky, so it's going to be interesting to see what the touch control stuff is going to be like.
It is tricky. I mean, the game is conceptually unusual, and, you know, you probably know what it is now, but 2D platformer which allows you to rotate the world in 90-degree increments and then flatten it back out again into a 2D plane. So you could create platforms where there weren't platforms before and access the back of things. It's just a really neat quasi-3D spin on the 2D genre. Loads of character. Quite complicated in terms of you have to remember where you've been. It's one of those draw a map in your head or on a piece of paper games. And we need to collect blocks to make this cube hold to get to the next area and get keys. And it's tough and it rewards you, you know, keeping track of where you've gone, lateral thinking. There's lots of stuff hidden in the game. So in terms of the game itself, you know, people know what it is. It's really good, complicated, but satisfying. The touch controls are pretty good, by which I mean up, down, left, right on the left-hand side of the screen, and then three controls on the lower right-hand side, so an interaction button, a chat button, and a jump button, which with a little picture of Gomez on it going, wee, with his fez all jaunty. And it feels pretty good. I would like the jump button to be slightly bigger on the smaller screen. I was playing it on a standard, you know, iPhone size, like an iPhone 6 or 7. And I'm finding myself occasionally missing the jump button or hitting the action when I want to hit jump just because the controls are slightly small. But that's standard touchscreen floating joystick problems, you know. It still worked and I was able to play without too much hassle, you know. And I'm sure I would get used to it if I played it for hours and hours and hours. As always with this thing, it's like, is it the best possible system to play Fez on? Probably not. But if it's your only system, then it's plenty good enough to do it. And it is a really, really cool and interesting game. So you can get that right now, iPhone, iPad. I think it's about £5, $5 if you want to go and grab it. The thing that I've just done a video for literally now, and we'll be rendering in a few seconds, is Life is Strange has arrived. This is kind of a week before the final chapter of Before the Storm, the Life is Strange prequel, is due to hit consoles and PC and everything. They've decided to bring the original 5-series adventure onto iPhone and iPad. And I've played that. People listen to the podcast know I really like it. You like it too, don't you, Em? You did a play.
I do. I'm rather fond of it.
Yeah, it's a really good thing. In terms of the mobile port,
It's been downscaled, so doesn't look as good, bit jaggy. I'm playing it on an older device, so maybe it looks better on an iPhone 10 or something, which I don't have. But it doesn't really matter. Like, no, it doesn't look quite as good. And it's got the anti-aliasing's not very good. It's quite a lot of jaggy edges on it. And I see some performance dips, so it gets a bit stuttering here and there. Again, I'm playing on an older device, so I'm sure it's better on the newer ones. Do they break the game? No, not at all. And obviously it's a much smaller screen, so it doesn't really matter so much with the resolution. What really comes through is the game itself, which, as I said before, gets off to a bit of a rocky start, but really turns into one of the best adventure games I've played in terms of emotional involvement, in terms of you identifying with a character and a bit of art, and I'm going to call it art, expressing what it's like to feel a certain way at a certain time in your life, being angsty and youthy and feeling isolated and cut off from your friends and wondering if I'd just done things a bit different, maybe I could have fixed everything, and that self-loathing stuff. It really communicates that amazingly well. And I would say still get it. Even though, again, perhaps not the best-looking version of the game, it still totally works. The touchscreen controls are great, because, I mean, you've been playing through all the Guardians games on, like, mobile and stuff, haven't you? So it's all... Those games just work, because all you need to do is just like a point-and-click adventure on PC. You're just, I want this conversation option, I want to walk here, then interact with this object. It's just really intuitive.
Yeah. How does the rewind stuff work on mobile?
So, the same. So it's in the top left-hand corner. I think whatever you did, press a trigger or something. I forget what the button is on console, but here it's just the icon will appear in the top left, and you just hit the rewind button. You will hit it again if you want it to speed up, or there's a quick rewind button where it's just like, just take me back to the previous point.
Oh, cool. Okay.
Which is quite a neat way of doing it. There's a time rewind mechanic if you haven't played the game. Don't want to spoil it too much. But that, again, that's nice and easy and intuitive and works fine. The only issues I've come up against is the pathfinding isn't great. So if you point Max to go, I want you to walk here, and there's a person in the way, she will just walk into that person and keep walking. So you have to kind of like angle the camera and make her walk around that person. I think there's an option to switch to floating joypads if you want, but there isn't any controller support at the minute. So bear that in mind. But again, it's not a game changer, because really this stuff is about the story and about the decisions you make and all of that. And that's all preserved perfectly intact. All the voice acting and everything remains. And again, if you haven't played it at this point, definitely do. And if mobile is the only way to play it, grab it. It's £2.99 for the first episode with the app in. You can get the first 3 episodes at the moment. And then the final 2 will be released after Christmas. That's the way it's working. So go for it. Life is Strange is a great and lovely thing. And it made me do a cry at the end. In a good way. Nice. God, I feel like there's so much still to go. So, Inside came out. Play Dead's follow-up to Limbo. And it was very much in keeping with Limbo in terms of it being a side-scrolling, moody adventure played completely silent, featuring a boy lost in a terrible world. That seems to be their genre that they've chosen.
It's true, but they're so good at it.
Oh, they're incredibly good at it. And Inside is an extension of that. So it's more complicated in many ways than Limbo. It's, instead of it being that kind of super flat 2D black and white thing, this is a 2.5D adventure. And you have the boys running through this kind of industrial factory area. And it plays with mechanics like assuming control of people, other people, through various means. And it's one of those, it's kind of like a 1984 vibe, that idea of everyone being rounded up and conformity seems to be a big theme running through the game. And it takes a couple of really interesting twists, and it ends in a way that I found very surprising. And it was like, whoa, what? And it's got those horror undertones that I really like. It's not a long game, like with Limbo. You can, whack through it in a few hours pretty easy. I haven't actually played it yet, because I need to update my phone to the latest version of iOS 11 in order to do it. But the Limbo control system, I think, has been employed here, because that's all it is. It's, walk backwards and forwards, jump, and interact. That's it. Super dead simple controls. It worked well with Limbo, and from what I hear, it works well with this. Don't be expecting it to be too long, but do expect it to be good and weird if you like that sort of thing, which I do. That's out right now for iOS. I think it's been released in chapters, this one, right? So you can download the first chapter or the first bit of the game for free, and then you pay to unlock the rest of it.
Yeah, which is a clever... I know a lot of people were quite concerned about what the play model was going to be.
Mm-hmm.
Pricing model, sorry. Because everyone was like, I really hope they don't make it free to play and stuff. And obviously, free to play would not work with this style of game.
No. So they haven't done that. All the reports, the reviews are in from the App Store. Everyone's loving it and saying it's great. So I played it, I completed it. It's a cracking game. Inside, out right now. This is, again, amazing week. Gorogoa. So we've been hearing about this game, or it's been in the works for something like 5 or 6 years. And you can sort of see it, because it is an really unusual, clever, intricate little game. That, again, not a long game. You can blast through it quite quickly, from what I hear. Like a couple of hours, 2-3 hours, you can get through it. But it's full of these little, whoa, discovery moments that you get from the best kind of games. And again, I've done a video for it. It's up on AppSpy. And it's best to see it, because it's a very visual game. But it's takes elements of Framed, that comic book game where you move around the panels of a comic to change the way that a character moves between those panels. So he'll walk from one panel into another window of the panel. And by swapping them around, you can change the order in which events play out. It takes that and then moves it to the next level, where you can actually zoom in and out and interact with objects in each individual tile. There are 4 tiles on the screen, for example, at any one time. And then you can start separating out the tile itself. So imagine you've got a picture of a boy standing in a doorway. With this game, you can actually put your finger on that tile and move it, and the shell, the wall in which the door is fixed, will move out of the image. So you can just grab the wall with the door frame in it and put it down, like it's a Photoshop layer. And you're moving it out. You're separating it out as a transparency. And then you might find that the image to the right has a person standing in the middle of the screen, just against a neutral wall. If you then take that wall with the doorway hole that you've just grabbed with the door frame and drop it on top of that image, then the boy will walk through the door that you've now created.
Oh my God.
So it's like you can create, it's almost like creating portals between the panels.
Mm.
By manipulating things like doorways and archways and stairways and stuff like that. Again, it sounds a bit abstract when you explain it, but when you see it working, it's incredibly like, oh, right, I get this. And then you start playing with the reality of these images. It's really something. Mm. Like, again, when I discovered it, again, it's a silent game. It doesn't give you any instructions, and you just feel around and like, wow. And it's all done in this cartoon style, where it's a very sort of painterly animated look. So it's not like cel shaded, it's actually like it's been sketched in with almost watercolors.
Yeah, well, it's hand painted, I think, isn't it? Hand drawn?
For real. Oh well, there you go.
Yeah, for real.
That's and it really, really shows. And I've again so impressed. It's beautiful and full of just like, whoa, cool, awesome. And I was gonna wait for the review, but instead I got the impression that if you show loads of stuff later in the game, you're probably spoiling it.
Mm-hmm.
So you can watch me play the first about 8 minutes of the game just to say this is what the game is. And if you're on the fence, check it out, because it's really cool.
Yeah.
And immediately in there, it's like, oh, this is one of the games of the year, clearly. So it's £4.99 or $4.99. And it's also coming to Switch. So keep your eyes out for that one. Gorogoa is the name. Do check it out. Seriously worth your time. Also rounds this week. I've been told by Glenn that I have to mention Like a Boss, which is another one that's apparently been going on for ages. Imagine an MMO where you are the big demon that everyone fights at the end of the second level.
Yeah. It's an interesting kind of thing, isn't it? Like, I mean, it's by Versus Evil. I remember chatting to them at Gamescom last year about it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and they showed me a little bit of it back then. And actually, the whole concept of it just being, like, it's that kind of... The bad guy, you know, or what the film's called, like, you know, Suicide Squad, where it focuses on the villains and stuff.
Yeah.
Right, you're the big bad boss, but you've got 40 heroes coming in the dungeon to steal all of your shit.
Yeah.
So the whole thing is you're just like, no, this is mine. And the heroes are just kind of, you know, there to get their grabs.
And it's done with quite a sort of jolly sense of humour and everything. And it knows it's obviously turning a convention on its head to some degree. And it's done from an isometric, you know, three-quarter angle view. And it's actually quite neat. All of the control stuff, all of the actions that you have to use to make your big demon either stomp on people or like smash the sword or go charging through them or whatever are really satisfying. It's lots of putting your finger on the screen, dragging to where you want the person to go, the demon to go, and then releasing, and you stomps through a kind of 50 dudes and you're like, yeah, nice. So it gives you that feeling of being kind of overpowered and being surrounded by these tiny little puny humans and smashing them all to bits. That's really fun. I've only played a little bit of it, but Glenn's played a lot more and he's been really enjoying it. It's free to play, so maybe take a look at Like a Boss. It's quite jolly. We've also got the Mutant Muds collection, which has come to Switch, which were mobile platformers that were really quite good. And that's all three games, so Mutant Muds Deluxe, Super Challenge, and Blox Puzzler are all coming to Switch. £10.99 for the entire package. Likewise, Ukulele has also turned up on the Switch, which got fairly decent reviews on console. I think not 100%, but it was kind of the not sequel to Banjo-Kazooie.
Yeah. Oh, I bashed that. I mean, I didn't bash it, but I still remember it's one of the everyone has that the review they do that no one likes.
Oh, was that the one where you said it wasn't good and everyone was like, "Shut up, it's amazing"?
Yeah, pretty much.
Okay. Right. Yeah, it happens to us all. So that's coming Switchward. How did you review it? What was it reviewed on then? The Switch.
No, I reviewed it like way back in the day because we didn't want to miss the miss the old boat because I had the Steam version of it.
I got you.
So I played it and it was good. It just like, I come from that kind of era of the 3D platformers and like that's kind of my jam.
Mm-hmm.
So when I played it, I was so excited, but then the levels kind of never led anywhere. You know how like it starts you, like in Spyro where it starts you at the beginning of the level and there's an end of a level, but it always circles?
Yeah.
So there's a clear defined pattern in it, but in the ukulele on Steam at least, there was just no direction and the hub was really weird. Like I couldn't navigate it and like everything kind of got really samey and the enemies weren't that hard to kill and you know all of the bits that you could collect just amounted to nothing.
I remember you saying it felt kind of aimless and directionless.
Yeah, so I hope they've kind of, and also that the camera angle was awful, which I know that they have fixed on the Switch.
Ah, okay.
Oh, there's a bird in my bird feeder.
We always get these cool asides when we're talking to Em, where she sketches off for a minute. A bee!
I got right outside my window, like where my setup is, I've put like one of those little window bird feeders, the suction ones.
Oh, yeah.
And they've kind of realised now that I can't get them out there, so I've got a little blue tit just coming in to steal some mealworms.
Ah, your delicious treats.
Yeah.
Friend to the animals. Very
friend
nice.
To the animals.
So it's going to be coming to Switch for $34.99. Check out all the other reviews that exist. We'll probably do our own. Or we've already done our own, really. But we'll check out if the Switch port is any good.
Next year, next week, though.
Fair enough. And finally, another one of those Kairosoft games, the studio name that I couldn't find a couple of weeks ago when I was trying to say, you know, those ones where you build a city like Car Story and Game Dev Story and all that. They're back with Dream Town Story, which is kind of a SimCity version of the game. So you're building houses and shops and cityscapes and all of that business for each download. And it's one of those games again. You've played them. You know what they are. There's more of that. So you can get that right now. Dreamtown Story available on all the mobiles. There we go. My voice lasted just about. Ugh. Sorry for the croakiness of this low energy podcast.
It's a mellow cast.
It is plague cast. But we will be back probably slightly earlier than usual next week. As promised, myself and Em and Glenn all jumping on board to give you the best games of 2017 on all the mobile platforms. We've got a lot to choose from. It's going to be a cracking episode. So come and join us for the end of year spectacular. And in the meantime, go and get one of these awesome games that came out this week. Go and get all of them if you like. You can have a great time. And we'll see you again next week for the 2017 farewell episode. Until then, see you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.